Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Ooh, yeah, normally I'm very excited, but I kind of want to throw up after that.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
That's a little rough. But welcome everybody to your AfterBuzz TV Game of Thrones after show. My name's Kyle Maddock, and I am joined by the lovely panel as usual. To my left, I have the wildling warrior woman herself, Kristen Snyder.
Hello.
It was very sinister right there.
Very
to her left, I have Sarah Stratton.
Hey, guys.
There we go. To her left, I have Autumn Chickless.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
And to her far left, but not so far away, I have Ryan Malady.
Hodor.
So, yes, thank you guys for joining us. This was Season 5, Episode 6, Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken. Oh. The words of House Martell.
This is such a, like, false-feeling title. Like, when I heard this title, Unbowed, Unbent, Broken, I was like, great, this is going to be epic. We're going to see people, like, standing up for themselves and crazy fights. And then I just felt like over and over again, I was getting scenes of people being broken.
Yeah.
Of, like,
that's a great point.
Like, this title made me feel like it was going to be rising action. It was going to be things that I was going to be standing behind, like on the team of these people. Because I kind of feel like that's what those words invoke for the House Martell. It shows them that they are strong, as you were explaining, that they are the house that has not ever had to really.
Yes, all the other houses and everything bowed before Targaryen, Aegon the Conqueror, all those years ago, but Dorne was the one place that didn't.
So this title, it's supposed to show that, and then we just got all these scenes of, I was like, this is not what I want to happen.
Oh, I was actually, I liked this episode a lot, because it was tense. That was, everything was just, I watched, you guys know, because we all watch it together, and I was like, I was making noises like that the entire time, because I was just like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? And even though nothing epicness, well, you know what, I disagree. I do think that some epic things happened, but even though there wasn't a lot of standing up for oneself in that way, I still was very happy with this episode.
I'm not saying that the episode wasn't entertaining and it didn't give a lot of room for the series to grow and for the season to grow.
Yes.
I just mean, like, there have been moments, like when Daenerys took over and her dragons did their first Ring of Fire, she marched with her armies, and you were just behind them, like, yes, stand up. And this one, with even some of my favorite characters, I was kind of like, oh, why are you doing that?
So something misleading about the title for you.
For me,
maybe it's ironic.
There we go, there it is.
Yeah, no, but I like what you said about people being broken in this episode, because I felt like I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. It doesn't matter that, you know, maybe it didn't happened the way we wanted it to, but I didn't know what was going to be the outcome of each episode. Like, we couldn't tell. We couldn't predict. And I loved it. I loved that suspense and being on the edge. Mm-hmm. And it's very thrilling.
Oh, it was good. I liked it. I thought we were going to see a lot more Dorne in this one just because of the title.
I was hoping.
But let's go. Let's start talking about them. We start off with a little, we find out this Trystane, who we haven't really met yet. We kind of seen him from a distance, but we
not
have
much
Trystane.
Of a fighter.
Not so much. He's a nice little prince there. But him and Marcella are planning to get married. And
oh, yeah, they are.
It seems to be just their thing, and nobody else seems to be on board with that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, isn't it so with young love?
Ah, yes.
I was like, yes, do it. Get married. It's all going to work out.
Did Romeo and Juliet teach you nothing, Kristen?
No, love one another. It works out.
He must have just fallen for, because here's this beautiful girl who doesn't look like any other girl that he's grown up with, and he's like, oh my gosh, so
right. Like the first blonde he's ever seen, and let me tell you.
Oof, those blondes, man. They're tricksters, watch out.
I like Tristan, though. He reminded me of Oberyn, and I like him. Okay. Other than his lack of swordsmanship, which can be taught.
Yeah. Well, we do see them a little bit later do the sword fight, but first we have to have Bronn and Jamie sneaking into the water gardens.
Oh, yeah, and the song.
Bronn, using his best voice and singing the song.
It was solid. I was happy. I was happy with him.
I really want to know the end of the song.
Yeah. What is it? What's the end? Does anybody know? Are those lyrics in the books?
Can
I don't remember.
Can we ask the interwebs, Ryan?
Because I'm curious.
It was send a little... us a video of you singing.
Yeah, it's please karaoke. There we go. At Cinematic Escape. Send it to me.
There you go. It was a little easy sneaking into the water gardens. I don't know how you guys felt about that, but that was a little convenient to just kind of just parade right in
there. I totally agree. I thought it at the time, and I was thinking to myself, one, wow, they got there really quickly and pretty easily, considering they're the water gardens, and two, why are they deciding to do all of this in the water gardens? It just felt very, like, kind of... It felt so unplanned, and I know
it is unplanned.
I mean, it is. I was talking about the sand snakes.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Because the sand snakes mm-hmm. should barge in and are like, "Yeah, we're gonna take you, and we're gonna fight you guys in the frickin' middle of everything." So of course they got caught. What do they think was going to happen? They're not doing this exactly in a, you know, in a hidden.
Well, look who their commander is, though.
Okay, fair.
Like, Alaria isn't really, like, going out to battle with them. I mean, she is no leader, in my opinion. And I wish she was, because I want the women in this show to fight and win and kill.
They fought in this one. They put a hurting on Bronn and Jaime. And I'm wondering, one of the sand snakes, I'm not sure which particular one, but got a slice on Jaime's arm. And I can't help but... think about the slice that Oberyn got on the mountain and how it led to this poison because they all kind of use poison down there. And I don't know if that's the case, but it scared me that they specifically showed that.
That's a great point. I don't think they would have like zoomed in on that shot if there wasn't some sort of, I don't know, unforeseeable.
Yeah. I'm glad you pinpointed because I couldn't tell if it was Jaime or Bronn because it was just that close-up.
They were dressed the same, yeah.
And I was wondering who that went through. Also, to speak on all of your guys' points on doing this in the open, the fact that this is all this young couple does every single day is from the same place and walk around the water gardens is ridiculous. And also that the guy with the axe-like thing, who I felt the song was about, him showing up so late to this battle to the point that it could be like, well, what is the actual plan? Kind of bothered me. Like, if his task was to watch out for them, you would think he would have been a little bit closer than a two-minute fight scene.
Yeah.
I felt like he knew that they were there and he knew that they were coming. Ryan,
well, I mean,
he needed
to assemble that army of, he needed to go, all right, they're going to fight it out. All right, let me just get all of my people.
Spears. Ryan, it looks like you got something to say. What's going
on? Yeah, you know, you asked me earlier if anyone knew the ending to Bronn's song.
Oh, yes, sing it.
And forgive me, I can't sing, but Kevin GT tells us the end of the song goes like this.
Sorry,
brothers,
spoilers.
Oh brothers, my days here are done. The Dornishman's taken my life. But what does it matter, for all men must die, and I've tasted the Dornish man's wife.
Oh! There we go.
Something like that. So,
okay. I wonder if he made up those lyrics or not.
I was about to say, did you make those up? If so, there's a job in here for you. There's a career path.
I'll keep my day job. Like
this was a really interesting scene to me, because this actually, there's a host of different characters, and this happens far later in the story to me, so I did not see this coming this early anyway, where their plans kind of failed. That's what I mean. That happens, right. And Arya Hota is the one that stops them. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty interesting to me that they kind of moved up the timetable. I really have no idea what's happening in the show anymore.
It seems pretty well. That's kind of exciting for us who only. I mean, I'm sorry, book readers. I know that you guys are awesome and your insights are amazing. But for those of us who have only seen the show, it's kind of cool to have all of the book readers start to get excited too.
Yeah.
Because all of the time when I'm watching my show with my friends, they're watching me like, oh, wait, she's going to react. And now I get to see them react. So it's real fun.
It's cool.
You guys get to suffer with us.
We do. But let's move on, unless you guys have anything else about Dorne to Tyrion.
I think that it's funny that we should put out there that this was the scene with Elaria, who actually did use the title of the episode, which is interesting because she's technically not a Martell, and she used the Martell words to incite the Sand Snakes to fight. Yeah. But I guess since they're his daughters, they're more
Martell.
But it was funny to me that the only We saw multiple Martells in this, and the only one who actually said that line was a non-Martell.
There you go.
And also,
she knows how to work them.
She does, and by the way, the only one who didn't fight. Which, I mean, it's obvious why she didn't, but right now I do have an issue with the fact that she is a lot of talk but isn't willing to get into the front of the fold. You know what I mean?
Well, we see her get surrounded then, so it seems like they know what she's doing and they're not happy with her.
Terrified, by the way. She looked terrified.
She did. I mean, she broke the law and now she has to face Doran's wrath.
But the thing is, she's already set the sand snakes loose.
But they're kidnapped too. Everybody's a prisoner now.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of at Doran's, at his beck and call now.
I wasn't too impressed with that whole thing. Like, what was their plan? Just to kill the girl, and then, I don't know, the fight scene was kind of weak.
It seems like they were running off with her to hold her hostage, maybe?
Like, what was their...
Gardens?
I don't know.
I felt that way, too. I'm like, really? This is... You're the sand snakes, and this is your idea of a...
Let's just get out of Doran.
Let's get out of there.
Let's get out of there.
Let's just go to the most visible place. Okay, continue.
Just you guys wait.
Let's take Ryan's
advice.
They're
new at this.
Let's get out of there. Let's go over to Tyrion here. How does this scene start? Let me see. Look at my notes here. We have... I'm sorry, somebody help me out.
We shall never see his like again. Breaks it to Jorah that his father died.
They're on the shore.
That's right, on the
shore.
Thank you.
Jorah, he's washing his hands. We have Tyrion sitting on a lovely log. And they have not found...
I love this. Setting the scene. Thank you. For the guy who can't remember. Okay, perfect. But yeah, we get the news that Jorah finally finds out that his father passed away, which is kind of a little bit heartbreaking there.
Well, it's just hard that he thinks that his own men killed him. Like, he's not getting the full story, which I didn't like as a viewer. Like, that pained me.
Yes, that's such a hard point. That, yes, we do get the emotional reaction of him losing his father, which I felt was very on point and made me also remember that death. But the fact that you didn't get the second sentence of, and then some of his other men avenged him. So you have Jorah, who's now tormented with the fact that he's lost his father and thinks that the people who are running the wall are mutineers.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Oh, true. We didn't get the full story.
Get a full story, and he's about to go meet Daenerys again. It's just lining up, so it's not putting him on the same side as people we are rooting for.
Mm.
Obviously, we'll find out eventually.
There we go.
After Jon Snow pulls out his father's sword, and there's the, you did it!
You did it! There was a small moment in this scene that I don't know if it's as significant for you viewers, but I know the book readers, where Tyrion admits that his dad was sleeping with Shay. Because in the book, it's a lot more ambiguous. You don't know if they're actually sleeping together, but he just comes out and like says it right in this episode.
Oh, yeah, he said, can we curse on the internet? It's the internet. We can curse, right? He said, and I'm quoting, he was fucking the woman I loved, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's ambiguous at all.
Yeah, not so much. Not so much. But then later on in the scene, they get caught by slavers.
Which I think is very ironic. I mean, that's the reason why Jorah got kind of banished to Essos in the first place, right? It's because he sold...
Very true.
He sold men into slavery.
Nice point.
And now he's getting... sold into slavery. I thought that was pretty ironic.
Interesting. But we have a little loop there where they're just going to kill them, but Tyrion kind of worms his way out of that one with a...
showing his politics.
They were going to sell Jorah into some form of either like the salt mines or something else.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, the dwarf, totally useless. Kill him. Cut off his cock, though. It's magical.
I can't help but think that links to like the previous season, previous episode or two episodes ago when he tells the guy at the door. He's like, oh, yeah, when he pats it on the head.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's lucky, yeah, but sucking his neck is even luckier. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's all the good things about being a dwarf once you leave Westeros.
You got a
it's
lucky
like
one.
All the lucky things that get added. Interesting to add another slaver / pirate to the mix. We've seen them before. I recognize one of the actors.
You kept saying that, yeah.
I can't remember his name at the moment. I'm going to have to look into it. But that just tells me that we're going to see even more of them, and they're going to have their own role to play. Because that normally happens when you recognize someone.
They're like, so they have their, mm-hmm. I guess, known enough, if you will, mm-hmm. to have a substantial role.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wonder if they're going to be... I wonder if them being slaves is going to be significant in the show, or they're just using it as a device to get them to Marine.
I think it's more than just using it as a device. I don't necessarily think that they'll, because they're on their way to the fighting pits now, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously going to attract some attention and be. I think it's a device, but not necessarily just to get them to Marine, because then there wouldn't be any reason to kidnap them in the first place. They could just get them there.
But they were walking, so I mean, somebody who has a map, you know, the super, they need the map.
That's true.
They're so far away.
But they're also on their way to Marine for the pretense that they're going to sell these people into the fighting pits, because they say they've never known a fighting pit to be a free men.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that supposedly the fighting pits in Marine are for free men.
True.
So they're kind of going into a situation that's not exactly what they're expecting.
Right, because they are expecting to gain the winnings and not Jorah, so mm-hmm. I think that'll be quite obvious, too. And they don't know that Dany knows Jorah, mm-hmm. and like probably will recognize that he wouldn't be offering himself to the pits, or at least going to question it. Do you guys think that she'll stop the fight when she sees him in there?
I feel like she has to, or if not, then
sends in more
warriors. Or by then, like, he has a stone face.
She told him if he ever came back, she'd kill him.
Yeah,
that's true.
So. Send in more warriors. Kill Jorah. Oof.
We'll see. You can't end the Mormont line.
There's the young Mormont right now. I guess she's a girl, so the name might not continue on.
Oh,
but
he does still have grayscale. So, yeah. I mean, it's going to end eventually.
We've learned that we can heal this.
Sarah does not want Jorah to go down that way.
I know.
But I don't think he will. I mean, he'll be in the pits. He would
die.
Go
down in the pits first.
Here we go. It's going to be fine, Sarah.
After he infects everyone in Marine.
Seriously.
Here we go.
That's an outbreak.
So let's wash those pits. We're washing bodies with Arya right now.
Nice transition.
Nice. I'm not proud about that one.
No, that wasn't good. We're going to kill you now.
It's lucky. So Arya is washing this body. She kind of has this montage of a bunch of different bodies. And we want to know what's behind the door. Yeah. Is sort of the mystery of this episode. And Jaqen comes in, or the girl comes in, and once again we play this this game of faces where Jaqen's whipping her and whatnot. And mm-hmm. does he want her to lie? Does he want her to be honest? What is he getting at? What's the training here?
My interpretation, because we got to see this game, in my opinion, three times. The first, or I could go back and count that, but three main times. The first is with the other girl who seems to kind of be in training.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that the girl is using the game. When she asks, you get the point. Am I telling the lie or am I telling the truth? Then, when you get it a second time between Arya and her teacher, you get that he can devise exactly when she is lying or telling the truth. And that also reveals the stronger inner truth that she does love the Hound.
I loved that point.
Because she can't admit that yet.
Oh, not at all. And why would she? But it seems like
she's going to have to.
And then the third time is her interpretation of when she uses the game to relate to the child who is sick. So it's when she takes the game, because it kind of circles in with the other line that you never stop playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the two first times, it's very targeted. We know we're in the game. And then third time is the actual practice, how they use the game to influence their religion, the public, these other people. And it brings her to the level that she can learn more, that she mm-hmm. is invited behind the door. Just to throw it in there, this is one of those moments that I was not rooting for, because we know that Arya can kill. We've known that she can kill people who are big and bad, and you know who dominate her physically. But now we've also learned that through assisted suicide, she can also kind of kill the more meek and innocent. So she's really going through the spectrum of death and affecting people.
She was helping
layers of murder.
One could argue. I mean, they did set it up to. In a way that made it seem merciful. Like, the whole point mm-hmm. of it was that, that's the reason the father came in and said, she's suffering, please, mm-hmm. I want it to end. So, regardless of whether or not you agree that it's the right decision, I don't think it was intended to be a, she's killing the innocent. I think it was intended to be a, she's being merciful on someone whose life is ending. And by the way, as this whole lying truth game is concerned, I mean, let's consider what it ultimately is that she's trying or not trying to become, which is no one. And so the lying truth, ultimately, if you are no one, there is no truth or lying to your existence, because you don't have, my father is, I'm connected to this, I'm connected to that. That doesn't exist if you are a non-entity, if you are a no one. So the fact that you can, if you can't differentiate between the two, I think that's the reason it's part of the training, is ultimately it has to become so fluid that lies and truth become kind of one.
Yeah.
Because they're for someone yep. who is no one, there is no difference. Did that read?
You ladies just killed it over there. Ryan, what's up?
Well, I was going to ask you guys, you know, when Jack and Ngar was, you know, or when Arya was in that room with the many faces, mm-hmm. and he asks her, are you ready to become no one? He goes, no, not no one, but you're ready to be someone else.
Someone else.
Now, what does that mean to you guys? What does that mean? Because the whole goal is to become no one, right? A faceless man. So what does it mean by she's ready to become someone else?
I feel like she's going to choose another face. I mean, for me, and I think that the fact when he was saying, like, she's not ready to give up her nose, her ears, her mouth, her dreams, her hopes, all that is her, I feel like all the washing of the bodies, I don't know if their faces get cut off and they're added to this library, but I also kind of felt like at some point she needs to die and her face needs to go up there. I don't know. Like, I feel like dying could be part of the process of becoming a faceless man.
That's what I originally thought. But I don't necessarily, because that would mean there are a lot of faceless men just wandering around at this point.
That's a good point.
I don't think that they're setting her up to just be a faceless man. I think that they're setting her up to be more, because they're creating visual differences between her and the other trainees. Mm-hmm. Whether it's when she's washing bodies and asking questions, they'll focus in, like with mm-hmm. those pan into her twiddling her thumbs. They'll pan in, or when we saw in the other episode how she didn't throw her sword. She didn't throw needle to the bottom of the lake.
Yep.
She hit it in a rock. They're constantly giving us these visual reminders that although she's in training and committed to this, there's something slightly different to Arya than the other faceless men. And I think that this line is just a further point to that. It was, you're not going to be known, you're ready to be someone. She's on this path, she's learning their skills, she's going through the hard work. But there's still that thing that's slightly different that to me tells me that even if she's committed to being, if she gets through training and she is a faceless man, there's going to be a point where she can still break that mold and be Arya Stark again, or she can be someone else again. This isn't going to be the end of her story that isolates her from her past or from Westeros or from the Seven Kingdoms or all the political action.
I have a question. So in my mind, the only faceless man that I really know is Jaqen H'ghar, and like the girl that's kind of training her and helping her, I don't think she's a faceless man. I think maybe she's in training and maybe she got held up or something or another, but she hasn't been accepted, I don't think, exactly yet either. So do we know any other faceless men at this point?
Well, the thing about faceless men is that they can change their face. So how many of you met? Like, Jaqen's already been two other people as far as we know. So if you had just met them but didn't see his face change, you would have said, oh, I know three faceless men, not knowing you only know one. So you don't...
That's a good point.
Where the numbers, like, one is many, many is one. What's going on?
I like
numbers.
That.
Numbers are not real.
Nobody cares about the numbers there.
No.
This room was amazing. I was looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Wow.
From reading it in the books, and then I was like, I can't wait to see what this looks like.
Is this
like.
What you imagined?
Yes, for the most part, yeah. A little different, but yeah, this the faces and the walls and everything. Oh, I loved it. It was such a great image. It was so cool.
It was so cool. So terrifying. So upsetting, so cool. Kind of going back and forward at the same time. For me, it almost felt like, I don't know, the becoming someone else, that was, I hate to be so lame and be like, they're the training wheels of becoming no one. But in a way, I think that you're right. She will not be the same as the other faceless men, if there's one or many. But the fact that she has been introduced to this hall suggests that she's obviously taken a step forward. And the fact that she was able to tell this lie fluidly suggests that she's never stops playing the game and has taken a step forward. So if I think becoming somebody seems like the next sequential step.
Are we going to recognize her next time we see her?
That was going to, like, how many different actresses and actors are going to be...
It's going to be interesting.
Stark.
Well, she's not ready to lose her nose and everything yet. Just be someone else. So maybe
she's going to have her nose center.
How literal is that? Do we think?
I don't know. So let's move on. Let's go to King's Landing. Littlefinger has used his TARDIS to get to King's Landing in a day. And, sorry, he travels a lot. He gets there very quickly. But he's back in King's Landing, and we get this meeting between Cersei and him. And I was really looking forward to finding out what was in the note. What did she needed to know about? And it was pretty much, if I go to war, will the veil be behind me? Yeah. It seemed like that's why he traveled the whole way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a little underwhelming, yes. Mm-hmm. That, like, the note, what was it? And that was it. But I guess it's important in that world.
Well, it's important because it got him there and it got him saying everything that he said, which made me very upset.
Well, yes. Then we go on to the next thing that Cersei wasn't expecting. All the information.
It's all part of his plan.
About Sansa. Oh, it is. He's positioning himself in a way where no matter who comes out on top, he comes out on top.
Yeah.
In a way. If Sansa and the North win and whatnot, he's got Sansa up there. If they all get defeated and go down, Cersei's already going to make him Warden of the North. So he's just positioning himself
until
to win.
Until Sansa kills Peter Baelish.
Ooh, is that the theory?
I don't know. I think she has to kill someone at some point, and like that would just be an epic murder.
I think that'll be way down the line, like seasons in the future.
Really, seasons, plural, because at this point he's already... The fact that he is introduced... This,
at least next season.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, maybe next season. But the fact that he's released this information, as viewers, obviously, we've always been privy to the fact that he's a conniving, backstabbing, terrible person. But now,
yeah. Ryan loves,
Ryan adores.
I love Littlefinger. He's so cool. No, I love him because he's. You know, he's just always one step ahead. He's like a chess master. You know, he's always two steps ahead. Mm-hmm. And to have someone who you know what he wants the throne, mm-hmm. but the way he's going to get there, you know, he's always playing everybody. He's so smart the way he does it. You know, I've never really seen him, besides him betraying Ned Stark in the way he did, I haven't really seen him really be too conniving in one way or the other.
Well,
in the way that would, like, hurt people.
To the point where you would dislike him.
To the point where he's a dislikable character for me.
But here's the thing, and this is what I'm kind of getting to. He just outed the fact that Sansa Stark is in Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I think she's safer, though, by Cersei knowing, like, and that not being a surprise. Because if it doesn't come from Peter and they're not, like, in cahoots about it...
Oh.
I feel like that's important. I feel like it's important to let your enemies know what you're trying to protect in some cases, and this was the time to tell her.
He's smart, man.
Yeah,
he's very smart.
Yeah. I mean, how many armies stand right now? Stannis's?
The Greyjoys are still around.
Knights of the Vale?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And?
The Lannisters.
Kinda, though.
They have their own army. It's led by her uncle.
Maybe. Yeah, they're at Lannisport.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely think that Littlefinger will be Warden of the North, and he will be with Sansa, at least until she kills him.
That's my question. Is if he's Warden... No, I've answered my own question in my head, but I guess my other question is whether or not he truly does love Sansa or have affection for her, or if he's just 100% using her.
I think that he definitely loves her, and I think she's the only one who can hurt him because of that.
I think he's obsessed with her. I don't know how much he loves her, but he's obsessed with her.
Oh, it's the same these days.
I meant attachment. I meant, like, emotional attachment. I didn't mean to bring love into it, guys.
It's like that girl who rejected you for the homecoming dance back in middle school.
But you can't stop thinking of her.
Now you're finally, like, you got, like, a good job, and she, like, comes back to want to date you.
Yeah, so now you want to date her daughter. Yeah.
Sarah, that's very confused. So then let's move on. Let's bring in the Queen of Thorns.
Yes.
She is back.
She is so cool. I aspire to be that cool when I grow up.
I feel like she wasn't that cool in this episode. She kind of let me down.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I think she's going to come back.
Cersei got the upper hand in this one. She sort of won the battle.
I think she's coming back with a vengeance, though.
But we do find out in this scene that Loras is being brought. There's an inquest first. There's not this absolute trial first. Mm-hmm. They've got to do this inquest, which leads us into the next scene. Mm-hmm. And the actual inquest, not a trial. Loras gets betrayed by his brothel friend.
Who was obviously sent by Cersei from the way beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You don't notice those white wine birthmarks for no reason.
Sarah, we were both talking about how disappointed we were earlier of that.
Yeah.
The reason Littlefinger came back was only to say that the Vale would be with mm-hmm. him. What if the reason he came back was to get this guy to turn on Loras? What if that's the reason?
I mean, that would be an interesting reason. I think that how they've set it up with also kind of putting Littlefinger in question by this force as well, and that he's been told to kind of like guard himself and be careful, is just setting up a very
I think that the Queen of Thorns put it really well, that Cersei's kind of being a fool in how she's playing her power and what she's doing with her enemies. It is working for the time being, but it won't work for long. The mm-hmm. whole thing mm-hmm. I was just waiting for was like, is no one going to shove it in her face that she that incest is a sin in the light of the Seven?
Mm. And not
her,
yet.
What her children have done? Like, how is this not brought up? On top of that, if anyone had any hope for Tommen as a king, this scene destroyed it.
Yep.
Not even a question. I wrote, step it up, man.
Okay, sorry.
I think he's deaf, honestly.
You think he's deaf?
Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't react. That's my theory at this point.
Fan theory. Okay.
Fan theory.
Tommen, what?
Forgive my awful handwriting. Hopefully you can't see it, but in huge letters in caps, I just wrote no to the scene because I was just so upset.
Did we expect any differently, though, really?
No, I didn't expect any differently, but what I was not expecting, I have to say, is I didn't think that they were going to throw Margaery under the bus as well.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
I mean, I did once she was lying right there.
Well, at that point. Yeah. But that's when I started making my weird noises, going like, oh, God, don't know how going to do it. And then, obviously, what happened happened.
Do you guys really like Margaery, though?
No, but I hate Cersei.
I feel like they're all going down, and I'm okay with all of them going down.
It just, to me, a lot of this is reading as kind of a stupid play, because it is brought up that they're the family that has money right now. They're the family that has resources right now.
We're talking about the Tyrells?
Yes, Margaery has a public appeal still with the mm-hmm. public of King's Landing. And I just feel like it's so easy to throw back in Cersei's face that she is not a very spiritual citizen. And I don't understand why we're not pursuing those avenues quicker, because the Queen of Thorns is so smart and everyone knows that.
You think that plot point is so obvious you're wondering why the show isn't getting
yes.
it quicker?
I think it's going to now, that because I think that Olenna is a very, very smart woman. I think she's proven herself that. And she had that speech earlier when talking to Cersei about, listen, sometimes your father knew it was best not necessarily to destroy your rivals. And I think that's what she was doing as well. I think she imprisoned Loras, mm-hmm. but she's not so quick to start throwing accusations. She's going to talk to her. She's going to, because she doesn't assume that this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But you saw her face when Margaery was imprisoned, and to me that was game on.
Yeah.
So I think if anyone is going to start bringing up the fact that Cersei has had three bastard children by her twin brother, it's gonna be now.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is just a back and forth. I mean, like, we can't forget that the queen did kill Joffrey, so it's like she kind of started this whole thing,
can't
you know?
Forget that.
Oh, man, the Tyrells and the Lannisters, it's good battling. I love it. I love it. It's good stuff. What's up, Ryan?
Getting a lot of commentary about Tommen. Opinions about him are running wild.
Is anyone on his side? That's the question.
So every other opinion I can't really say on air, but except for that he is a child. He's a boy. And mm-hmm. I think it's very easy to forget that Tommen, you know, he's thrown into this position where, what is he just going to say, kill them, you know? I feel like I don't really respect him as a king, but I don't really hate him, even though as much as that scene, it was just like, oh, Tommen,
no,
you're
I
such
get
a...
it.
Blank, mm-hmm. you know, and then you see Cersei sit, I'm feeling, you know, all these feelings of Cersei, yeah. she doesn't know what she's doing. She does, she wants Margaery out of the picture, that whole prophecy in the beginning of the first, you know, episode, but it's gonna bite her in the butt with
the
Tyrells.
But the difference a little bit about Tommen is, when we first introduced to him, when he got pulled up as king, we did have that one scene with him and his grandfather going over, what does it take to be a good king? And it was like, whether it's knowledge or power or whatnot. And you did get the idea that there was a possibility for him to be a good ruler. You get other people saying he's sweet. You get that he's listening. Versus, like, when you look at the little Lord of the Vale, from the moment you're introduced to him, you know that if he's ever in power, it's going to be anarchy. Like, he's just going to throw people out the moon door.
Well, and Robin is definitely Littlefinger's puppet, but Tommen was supposed to be Tywin's puppet. Tywin's dead. Tommen's only advice that he got from him was pretty much listen to your counsel, and now Cersei is his counsel.
And you have his brother Joffrey, who would do anything he wanted, and he kind of... He heard everybody not liking it very much, and so he's had this, don't do that.
You also have to remember that As far as he's concerned, this is an honest trial, or not trial, inquest that will turn into a trial that's going on. He doesn't have any understanding of the forces at play behind the scenes, who's moving the pieces in the puppets. So to him, this is an honest trial. His wife slash the queen is put on trial, and then all of a sudden she's accused of lying. So, of course, a young child is... what is he going to do? Because at the same time, as much as we know that this is a setup and that, you know, she's actually not the person to blame in this situation, all he knows is that his queen might be lying to him in the kingdom.
I disagree. I think that there's a gut instinct with pretty much anyone that if you are married, even at that young age, you're going to fight for them. Mm. Like, you are... If it was family, or I think that you just do, you fight for them, whether it's right or wrong.
We don't know if we don't know if that's going to happen yet. My point is, how old is he? Does anyone know how old Tommen is?
All I know is, I don't care. He's the most boring character in the show, and I don't even care how old
boring
he is.
Boring character. It's weird that they cast him as an older kid in the show, because in the book, he's still like this little kid playing with kittens in the corner and his like Lego
that
box.
That would be more entertaining.
But anywho, let's go on to another bath scene. Not the washing, but Miranda giving Sansa a bath.
Mm. I loved this scene.
Same. You are sinister.
No, this scene was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was probably one of my favorite scenes in the entire episode. I'm totally on board with Kristen. The dialogue, the tension, the turn when Sansa just flips the switch and shows how much she knows. Oh, I knew how it was shot in that. It was great.
Oh, with the dripping of the black coming out. Mm-hmm. We could get so deep into this.
Get deep, girl.
Here we go. We're gonna get deep now.
That's what they want.
Exactly.
That's what we all want.
All right, so obviously you have Miranda washing out the black in her hair. And the thing that was very troublesome to me was her red hair is very signature of the old Sansa. So the fact that she dyed her hair was supposed to be this coming...
How did I not notice that? Okay.
Well, yeah. Nice. Yeah, so, you know, she's wringing out the black in her hair. So to me, I was thinking, oh my God, please don't, you know, stand up for yourself, Sansa. And I was worried that it wasn't going to happen because the red in her hair is so indicative of who she is. Mm. But what I loved was the fact that the red starts coming out and she was able to turn and stand up for herself, mm-hmm. which to me, if we're going to get all symbolic... almost felt like she was embracing who she actually
Absolutely.
Is and playing this game at the same time. And she turns to her, and with, by the way, beautiful lighting, cinematographer,
yes.
Will, DP, way to go, and says, oh, how long have you loved him? And then she goes, I am Sansa Stark, and this is my home, and you can't hurt me, or whatever it was.
You won't scare me.
You can't frighten me. So, to me, that was the ultimate embracing with the fact that her hair is back, sort of, and she's just sitting there going, try me. Mm. I dare you. It's awesome.
And it was such a good flip on the game that we saw Arya playing, and like her embracing of her name and then stripping down.
That's a great point.
And it was just like
parallels.
Unbroken.
It was just like good moment for these two sisters, and I was like, Sansa would be so good at this lying game in the House of Black.
Yeah, because if they were, I like what you just threw out there, unbroken, because if they were broken, they wouldn't be able to stand up like they are right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's the famous phrase? I'm going to butcher it, but it's a about fear, like you don't not have fear, but facing fear.
Oh, you mean about bravery?
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, in a nutshell, it's that bravery doesn't mean not being afraid, it means standing up for what you're afraid of.
And this was so Sansa in this moment, because as soon as Miranda leaves the room, she like breaks down a bit. And so she's fearful that entire time, but she just fights through it.
And that's awesome.
Oh, it's so brave. Oh, it was so good. But then she gets at her wedding. Her wedding dress. There you go.
who wants a winter wedding talk. Now? Seriously. That was gorgeous.
Oh, how many Pinterest people are just, I think you brought that up, we thought the same exact thing. Oh my God, I want that dress. Oh my God, I need those lanterns. At my
it would have been beautiful if it wasn't so creepy.
It would have been absolutely magnificent if it weren't for the context and everything about it.
But I was still into it.
Before we get outside, we have Theon come to the room, and he's like, take my arm, and she says no, and he's like, he knows he's going to get it for that later on. And it's this first interaction we had between the two of them where they're alone. Mm-hmm. I was wondering how she was going to react. I expected that to be the reaction, but it was good to see like where they stood in that scene.
You expect me to care what they do to you?
That was good. That's good.
Oh,
I can't wait for him to actually come clean to her that he didn't actually murder her brother.
You
that
think
they're
she'll
still
believe
out there.
Him?
Well, the thing is,
eventually
I think,
when they show up.
Yeah, but I don't think that.
They locked in a tree somewhere.
That's a good point because I don't think that's going to happen until closer to the end of this season, considering we're not going to get Bran and Hodor and Rickon in this season, so we think. So it's like, I don't think that Theon is going to tell her that till closer to the end of the season, till we would go then and see them.
Does he have the awareness at this point to be able to?
I think he does. I mean, he was clearly crying in this episode.
He was twisted up, as he should be. That was some dark shit that was going on there. I was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but at this point, if it wasn't affecting him, he would be numb to it. And he wasn't numb to it, so that means he hasn't lost sight of his past with the Starks.
Very true.
Yeah. Ryan, what's up?
Well, first of all, I gotta say that I love how they, you know, we're not dragging out trials and weddings the whole season. I love how it's just like, Loras, trial, boom, done, there it is, boom, wedding, boom, done. I was just asking everybody, so we had the red wedding, and we had the purple wedding. What should we call this wedding?
The snow
and
wedding.
And everyone is calling it the white wedding.
Ah. It's the only one
nice
without
day for white wedding.
But the thing is this actually a legitimate wedding?
Because it's not in the light of the Seven.
No, but in the north, in the north, that's how they do it.
Yeah, this is true. But will Peter Baelish see it that way?
Well, the realm sees it that way, I suppose.
Yeah. So marriage doesn't mean anything to Peter Baelish.
But this was the first scene in a while where Theon said his name.
Yeah.
Which was a bit jarring.
The last time was at Moat Cailin.
Was it? He pretended against the Greyjoys, the sick Greyjoys.
Believe.
He remembers.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I was so scared because when he said it, I was like, oh no, they can't. It's a wedding. Okay, nothing's going to happen here. But it was a tense moment. This whole thing was tense, as we all know.
Mm-hmm. I was just rooting for someone to die in the bridal chamber, and it just didn't happen.
I know. Yeah.
It can't yet, though. We have to be there and cringe and be angry and be mad.
I was mad.
It's going to happen, you know? But we need to go through this period where we're angry and, you know, we want it as much as she does.
Of course, because just like the way they built up Joffrey so that you literally wanted to skin him alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We kind of want to see, we're going to want to see Ramsay be skinned alive by the end of this. I mean, that last scene, well, I mean, right before the last scene, obviously you have that moment, and I wanted to ask you guys about this with Sansa when he says, do you take this man? And she's just standing there, and she doesn't say anything. And obviously the immediate instinct is, oh, she's debating whether or not she's going to say yes. I don't know if that's necessarily the case because she doesn't have too much of a choice. Mm-hmm. So what was she deliberating in that moment, if not that? Maybe it is, but if not that, what would she be waiting on?
I just felt like she didn't want to be anxious about the whole thing. Yeah.
I don't know. It seems...
There is a part of her that is saying no.
Yeah.
Of course. So she had just had to fight past that. She had to step it up, just like in the bath scene where she was very afraid, and she goes, and then she said what she said. This scene, it was very much the same. Where it's like,
that's great. Okay, right.
So I think it's just sucking it up. Yep. All right, I was just wondering if you guys thought that there was any kind of plan, or if I'd like missed some hidden looks, because that's the thing about the show. If you blink for a second, you might miss a really quick flash to another character and then back. That would completely give away everything, which is why it's so good.
Oh man, so there we have it. That was a pretty intense episode. Ryan, you want to do some rapid fire stuff?
I have so much anxiety. I mean, just to end it like that, like with Sansa pretty much getting raped, like, all right, it was finally like
in front of Theon. Okay.
It finally came to a point where, I mean, all right, so Sansa, I mean, she was, what, betrothed to Joffrey, who was crazy, and then Loras, who was gay, and then Tyrion, who was a dwarf, and now she's got 50 Shades of Ramsay, and I just feel so bad.
50 Shades of Greyjoy.
50 Shades of Greyjoy, yeah. I just feel so bad and so much anxiety, and I just... Hodor.
Hodor, that's all you can say.
Yeah, let's do rapid fire. Give me 2 seconds.
Oh, 2 seconds. There we go.
Well, in those 2 seconds, let me just say that Theon's face at the end of this episode, I thought he was going to kill. I thought he was going to, like, do something, and then it cut to black.
They are definitely setting us up for Theon's revenge. One last revenge, I think, we'll get.
Yeah, I don't know. It's... Sansa's finally starting to see how evil Ramsay is, and in a horrible way. There was nothing else. Like, he hasn't done anything else in front of her, except for parade Theon around. Like, he hasn't killed anyone. He hasn't skinned anyone in front of her.
I was kind of waiting for Sansa to kind of come up with her own strength in this and do something along the lines of, first, I don't know, you have to send away Miranda or something. I thought she was going to pull some sort of straw to assert her power in this relationship. But she's very much taking, like, a back seat. Like, she hasn't really... She hasn't said anything to him.
It's a weird thing.
They don't have conversations.
It's a weird thing because, yes, they need her, so they can't kill her. But you can do a lot of bad stuff to somebody without killing them. And, she doesn't really have that much power.
This is part of the game that she's playing. Obviously, she doesn't want to play this part, but she knows she has to.
Yeah, agreed. At the end of the day, Ramsay says, oh, I won't hurt her. He's already broken that promise. So there are a lot of things you can do to someone without necessarily killing them, like you said. And if I were her, I completely understand not asserting her authority just yet against him, because she's seen, or at least heard of, the heinous stuff that he's capable of.
Yeah.
And the list of Kira, Violet, Tansy,
There's
a whole song about the girls.
Do we have some rapid fire?
All right, guys, rapid fire. You know the drill. I'll ask the questions. You keep the answers short. Kyle.
I didn't do it.
Akash asks, how will the Queen of Thorns respond to all this?
Badassly.
One word is a little too
much. You can have more than 3 syllables.
Oh, sorry. There we go. How's she going to do it? She's going to come up with some plan.
More jewelry, I think.
Is she gonna reveal Cersei's secrets?
I hope so. I would agree with that.
Okay.
All right. Kristen. Daenerys, Sansa, or Margaery? Go.
Daenerys.
Always. Always.
Very cool.
That was one word.
That was rapid. Theodoric asks, do you think we will see Sansa murder somebody this season?
Whether or not... Yes, I do. I think that they've been building up Sansa. Like, from the end of last season, we caught her with that at the height of the stairs in the really dark robe. I think they've really just put her into becoming her own. Yes, I do think she's going to kill someone. I'm kind of hoping season finale we're going to see bye-bye Mr. Peter Baelish.
Ramsay first!
I don't think someone else is going to kill him.
Okay.
Jon Snow.
All right, and Autumn. Josue... I'm sorry if I pronounce your names wrong. Josue asks...
You are.
That's not a name.
There's an accent over the...
All right, rapid fire.
Autumn, is Ramsay... You think Ramsay is better or worse than Joffrey when it comes to being with Sansa?
Oh, boy. The thing is, this music is very difficult to respond under, but I would say that Joffrey was a sadist, and he never ended up getting to exploit the deep realms because he was king of what he was capable of. So ultimately, I think that Ramsay has done much more heinous things and much more terrible things, but whether or not Joffrey wouldn't do that if he had the ability, I'm not sure. So for right now, I'll answer Ramsay, but there could have...
Okay.
You think Joffrey, really?
There we go.
Joffrey. I remember bow and arrows.
Ramsay does the mental stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. Joffrey was
so does Joffrey. Look at your dad's head on a spike.
Yeah, well,
look at your stepdad's head on a spike.
By the way, I hated Joffrey more. That's for certain.
There we go. Let's go to predictions, everybody. Oh, wait.
Yep. The predictions.
Okay,
there
we go. We're in. Yeah. Predictions.
Okay.
What do you guys think's going to happen next
week? I think Queen of Thorn is going to kick some ass. I think that she is going to make some power plays on Cersei and put her in her place. I think that, like Sarah said, Cersei's made some some seriously bad decisions in this episode.
Okay. Here we go.
Instead of predictions, I made an I miss you list.
Meaning,
first of all, I will always miss Ned Stark, so that always has to be on the front, yeah, front of that. But I miss you, Rickon. I miss you, Hodor. I miss you, Bran. And I miss you, little Robert. Where the heck is he? So that's more of where my focus is.
Okay. You're in like a sad place right now. I know this episode is a little jarring.
I miss them dearly.
Kristen, what's going to happen?
You know what? Marjorie is gonna get the some pain, and I think she needs it because, you know what, she's been walking around like she's the shit, and she needs a little whipping. And so I'm excited that she
is gonna... beef with Marjorie?
Because, you know what, she's just, I'm queen, I'm gonna marry whoever's king, and I'm just gonna walk around like nobody can hurt me. And it's like, you know what, girl, you need to be put in your place.
I think you just like, I think you just like hurting people.
No, I don't, but some people need to be hurt.
Be careful.
Who's worse, Kristen, Joffrey, or Ramsay? Looks like Alistair Thorne is going to exert a little power when Jon leaves here. He was, he was picking on Sam a little bit in this preview, which scares me a little bit.
Well, Sam has a good track record, so my bet's on Sam.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. Oh, wait, one more prediction from Ryan before we sign off. Let's do this.
I predict that right after this, we're going to go film a confession where we're going to play some Wed, Dead, Behead.
Awesome.
Yes.
And, yeah, I predict that people are going to keep commenting on our YouTube page at youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV and tweeting us throughout the week using the hashtag ABTVGOT.
Nice.
And I predict that I'll be reading them, and my anxiety might go away by the next episode. I don't know.
There we go.
We're also on iTunes.
We are on iTunes, so please rate us and leave a comment there on YouTube. Like and subscribe. And thank you guys so much for watching this AfterBuzz TV Game of Thrones After Show. My name is Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard anywhere online.
I am Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, and you can follow me at Cinematic Escape, or you can check out my blog, cinematicescape.com.
I'm Sarah. I don't have any of those things, but you can be jealous of the hand pin that I grabbed.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice.
I'll fight you for it.
I like it.
I'm just kidding.
No. I am very jealous, and I also am Autumn Chickless. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, soon to be Periscope. I still can't figure it out, but I will, in all other forms of social media, at my name, Autumn Chickless.
Hodor, Hodor, Hodor. No. Ryan Mallet, you guys can keep up with me at Ryan Mallety. Thanks again.
Awesome.
Valar Morghulis.
Valdoheris.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.